You saved me. You redeemed me from the pit. I was in it, Emily. I was in the ultimate moment of terror that is zombie takeout. It is nothing. Simple, hideous nothing.
Hello and welcome to episode 473 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
Hello, I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's movie, which is from 1980, Altered States. This is our William Hurt tribute. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by the human mind. Abandon hope, all you who enter here.
Primordial soup is one hell of a drug. And best of all, it's inside all of us. All right, so I should have been doing stretches before getting into this one, because it's like, wow. We begin with a young scientist and his trusty sidekick, who they're playing around with a sensory deprivation tank. It was kind of a new technology during the late 60s.
Right. And the beginning of the film is set in 67.
Yes. Yes.
And, incidentally, has anyone ever seen Bob Balaban and Richard Dreyfuss in the same room?
My first note is, how many movies start with a starring Bob Balaban? But man, that's a dude whose career I would kill for. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ. What a national treasure Bob Balaban is. But anyway. So they're just playing around with the sensory deprivation tank. No big. I'm trying to think. Not much really came of it, but he, you know, sensed some things, had some visions. Seems like he had a lot of psychological problems in the first place that he just kind of blurred out a lot.
Opened a portal to another dimension. No, that's Stranger Things. Sorry.
Yeah, it is very Stranger Things, isn't it? Of course, I mean, this is kind of the OG.
A lot of things borrowed from this movie.
Yeah, this is source material for a lot that we'll get into. So, no biggie. I'm trying to remember how he comes about taking the mind-altering drug and then combining that with sensory deprivation.
He starts having visions just based on the sensory deprivation. And then he decides to take it a little further with some hallucinogens.
Right, so he goes down to this tribe, and they let him participate in a ritual, and he, of course, hallucinates the, you know, Mexican tree frog of Sri Lanka or whatever.
And it's just a monitor lizard.
It's a little too soon to make lizard jokes, because he pretty much dismantled one in his
while tripping seat. He murdered a monitor lizard that this group of indigenous people believed was sacred,
and so he takes it back with him and decides
not the lizard, the drug.
Yes, the drug. He takes the drug back with him. The lizard would be, I don't even know how customs were back in the late 70s, early 80s, but I imagine they would not have appreciated a gutless lizard on the plane. So he decides to combine this with the sensory deprivation tank. He's got more clout now, of course, because it's about 13 years later. And he finally gets to conduct some experiments where devolves
like in the Jonathan Colton song, for anybody who gets that reference. Yeah, he turns into a monkey or an ape,
right? And of course the other key part of this, in 67 he meets a woman that he winds up marrying, and he doesn't really pay a whole lot of attention to her, except for his head's always in his work. And of course, much
like a lot of this movie, Hurt's character, Edward, I think his name is, really likes to show off how smart he is.
Yes. Yes. And of course, there's a very interesting story about the script and how it was directed and stuff that I'm sure, yeah, I don't know if you have in your notes, but I
actually don't.
Talk to.
So go ahead.
We can talk about there. Late. We'll talk about when I'm done with the summary. And the reason why, of course, there are some people that interpret that love story as being the main part of the meat and bones of this story, that everything else is just kind of his head is in his job too much, and his passion, and he's not looking at life and not living his life.
I mean, that kind of explains the ending, but that's kind of like saying the original trilogy was about Wedge Antilles. He was there.
That's true. He was. But we'll get into this in a bit. Let's get we finish up this monstrous.
So he turns into this ape man, caveman, basically.
He turns into, you know, caveman, and the one detail they miss, because he wants to repeat the experiment, but each time he repeats the experiment, the one detail they miss is that he goes further back. So he was more human, you know, but in the second one, he is then kind of this weird missing link.
Yeah.
Although there's some strange thing, like when they replay the audio of the first experiment, he is more ape-like in when they replay the audio of it later in the movie. That really didn't make any sense. They changed the audio from what actually happened in the first half to the second time they replayed it back. I don't know why. It's, you know, it's that Ken Russell guy. But anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So he becomes like a missing link, and he lets himself out. Oh, that's right. He was on his own for this, when the second experiment.
Right.
Because everyone was like, you're killing yourself. What are you doing? Are you nuts? They took an x-ray of him, and, you know, he seemed ape-like in his x-ray.
Did you recognize the x-ray tech?
Of course. Post-Black Sheep Squadron, pre-Night Court, John Larroquette. But nobody wants anything to do with them, so he just comes in and uses the drug and the sensory deprivation chamber on his own, lets himself out, nearly kills a security guard, although I thought he was gone for sure, and then goes and hunts in the zoo.
This is a caveman, but, you know, I think a little less evolved than that.
Right. Right, you know, that was kind of the point. Each time he did it, he went further back.
I was going to recommend this movie before that scene, and then it just went on and on and on.
And then when he goes, they finally, he somehow convinces everyone to do this again. Which is just like, are you serious? You can't, like, I would have expected somebody else would have stepped in and said, you know what, I'll try it. But no, he tries it again. And, well, this time he goes back way too far.
Primordial soup.
It is all fun and games until you hit the primordial soup.
And you turn into some kind of swirling cloud?
It's you know, the beginning of life.
Yeah.
Literally, there's nothing there, and he's just gonna get sucked up into it, and until his wife Emily pulls him out. And the other catch was, every time he did this experiment, it didn't end with the experiment. There were always flashbacks that would hit him when he was trying to go on with his life. And that, of course, happens here for the primordial soup too.
Right.
And she has to save him again.
Right after it briefly turns into a, depending on how you look at it, either a Nick Kershaw or an Aha video.
That they totally were taking that at the end of the Aha video, because he was hitting himself against the wall to, you know, go from the animated reality to this reality. And of course, William Hurt here was hitting the wall to get from his altered reality.
Yeah. Nick Kershaw did that in the Wouldn't It Be Good video, too.
Titty, I don't remember that the end that part of the video.
But I'm pretty sure I remember them doing that as well. Anyway.
But hilarity ensues and a lot of fast visual cues.
I'm kind of disgusted with how much I relate to the intellectual wankery in this movie.
But that's just it. That is entirely what the writer was getting at least. You know, about you can't, I mean, religion, science, no matter what it is, or, you know, you, there's no answer there. You know, that's the parallel he's drawing in the end, was that the answer is there is no answer.
But so, the dialogue in the film really likes to disappear up its own ass.
Now, here's the funny thing about this. The writer, and I can't remember his name, Paddy
Chayefsky,
and Ken Russell hated each other. Now, the story I've gathered is that... Ken Russell could not change a stitch of dialogue in his screenplay. Even though he disavowed the movie and had used like a pseudonym for the screenplay writer. But he was not allowed to change a single hint of word of dialogue. So his plan was to just have them deliver it rapid fire like that, and to have them doing it like over while drinking or eating, or just get all the dialogue that he didn't like out of the way.
Wow.
Which, I mean,
that makes me like the movie a bit more.
Because I was in the same boat, like, watching it, like, what the fuck is with this dialogue? They were so fast in the dialogue. I always watch with closed captioning because, well, it's just easier on the ear. And also, when we're looking for lines to use for the intro, it's like, that's it. You know, it's better to easier to get it down. They were speaking too fast for the closed captioning. Like, they were four lines ahead.
It's a shame Hurt didn't do more sci-fi, because the man could handle some techno babble.
Yes. Holy shit. Like, how they didn't get him as captain of the Enterprise or something, you know?
Now, Chayefsky also wrote the screenplay for Network.
Wow, interestingly. Okay.
As we said, the best film we've ever reviewed.
Yeah.
The novel and the film are based in part on John C. Lilly's sensory deprivation research conducted in isolation tanks under the influence of psychoactive drugs like mescaline, ketamine, and LSD. Interesting that they didn't try any of that stuff in the film. They just went straight to the ayahuasca analog. But in the beginning, when we first see him in the tank, I kind of half expected to hear Jacques Cousteau.
Or Steve Zissou.
And we get to this, you know, right after that initial experiment, before we really know what's going on. When they have that first rapid fire, you know, techno babble, we're at a party at his, you know, sidekick Arthur's place, Balaban's character, and they are really going out of their way to say 60s. They're smoking weed. You have Light My Fire in the background. A few minutes later, you hear sitar music in the background.
What a great framing for Hurt's entrance, though. This dark hallway, and the door opens, and he's just standing in the frame of the door with the natural light at his back. I mean, it's so low budget, but it was so effective, using sunlight in a dark hallway.
I gotta say, I don't buy Blair Brown as a hippie.
No. Not at all.
And there was another issue with his character. And I can't say it was unrealistic, because we've both known people like this. He went straight from, like, talking about his research rapid fire to, like, trying to fuck her. Like, on a dime.
And then went from there to his family history. Like, I mean, holy shit, there was no punctuation to any of that.
They interrupt a sex scene with a religious discussion.
Yes.
And in the movie's defense, I have gotten into a religious discussion with an ex one time while we were making out. She was a very, very liberal Mormon. I was Buddhist, still kind of am. But, you know, so there was an interesting discussion there in the car, you know, during, you know, so I can kind of get where they went in the movie. It was a unique approach to an expository backstory dump.
You're right. Like I said, he could not change a single word of dialogue. So, yeah, just spit it all out.
Interrupt the sex scene, get into a brief religious discussion, and then he just info dumps his whole backstory.
And then all I have to summarize this whole thing is, that's a lot on the first date.
Yeah. And you've talked recently about how, like, 70s movies and TV had a different feel, or kind of had that slower feel.
Yes.
This very much has that kind of rambling 70s thing.
It does, but it moves so fast in some ways. It must have been really jarring for the audience back then to see this, because for a film from 1980, this fucking just... And, of course, the visuals.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And he starts, you know, having these trippy visuals in the tank before he ever gets any drugs involved. First one, we get this, like, multi-headed goat on a crucifix. Or multi-eyed goat on a crucifix.
Yes.
Like, if his brain goes there just with the absence of any external stimuli, the man desperately needs a therapist.
They probably didn't think about that back then, though.
Oh, I don't know. Late 70s, early 80s is when therapy started to become mainstream. That's why every sitcom had that transference storyline.
Oh, you know, you're probably right. That's like the whole thing with MASH and the Sydney episodes.
The Sydney stuff. And like every sitcom in the like Three's Company era had that, you know, storyline where one of the characters would start therapy and then fall in love with their therapist, and then the therapist would explain transference. Every sitcom did that. I gotta say, I enjoyed the line when Hertz line, "I think I can make a reasonably good husband." Funniest thing I've probably heard since Carousel. Like, this guy just screams red flags.
Of course. And it's funny that Emily sees that, and like she's aware of this the whole way going through. And even at the end, it's just like lamenting, why the fuck have I done this to myself? Yeah. Like, I saw this guy was a nut job.
And then we somehow jump forward to when they had kids. We just like the movie just jumps 5 years just randomly.
Oh, is it 5 years after?
I'm ballparking. Because
they have a couple of small kids. They haven't had kids yet. And then they come back with the kids.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what time everything happened then. Like, was it the mid-70s then where they came in and got married?
I would guess, like, you know, early to mid-70s is when they have the kid, when they come in and they have the kids. It's just the intellectual privilege in this movie is just hilarious. It's just overly educated rich white people.
Oh, yeah.
And again, it was 1980, but the presentation of the indigenous people as basically witches, kind of racist. And the trips are actually a bit less interesting when he's actually had a hallucinogen. I just found it more interesting when it was just the tank.
Oh, I don't know. I liked all the trips. I liked them more here than I did in Gothic, which is kind of weird because you would think he had more effects to play with in Gothic, and he had gotten better at doing them than this like rudimentary stuff that he was able to. I think it's more impressive that he was able to do this in 1980.
In that sense, yes. I just found it more interesting when it was just a product of not having any sensory data.
That's true. The first one was the multiple eyes, and then he went to like the I think it was like clips from a movie from the 30s about like hell and stuff that he did in red.
The satanic Jesus thing.
And then the whole, you know, the sand and all that crazy stuff.
Well, the sand was after he took the mushroom.
Right.
The music during that hallucination reminded me a lot of the TOS fight music.
I'm trying to think if this was before or after The Omen.
Oh, around the same time, maybe slightly before. I want to say Omen was like 81, 82.
Oh, Omen 76.
Oh, wow. Okay. Huh.
So that's where he was getting the whole satanic imagery, most likely.
But I got a kick of during the trip on the mushroom, we have this shot of the mushroom in a silhouette. Of course, it's a mushroom. It looks very phallic. And then we have Emily's, form kind of bowing to it. Like, yes, worship the penis-shaped mushroom.
Yes.
I mean, if nothing else, it's a good morality tale about the person who should completely avoid hallucinogenic experiences.
It's like a just say no Faustian tale. Yeah,
exactly. And it predates that whole thing a little bit.
What?
That whole, war against drugs thing.
Yeah, the war against drugs.
It predates it a little. I was glad to see them getting some pushback from, like, the higher-ups at the hospital they were, using, whose facilities they were using.
Charles Hayde, of course, most known, at least for me, most known for Hill Street Blues, which he did after this.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of just the one note of the kind of the police cop captain, right. Screaming at the
he's the same guy in this, but at least someone was coming down on them for this shit until he decides to keep an eye on them and kind of plays along.
Well, I think because the x-ray turned out to be for the real deal, he's like, oh.
And I gotta say, it kind of lost me a little when he actually started physically changing.
Right. How does that happen?
I kind of put that aside. I thought, well, it's really more of a horror film than a hard sci-fi. I'll let it go. I was kind of coming in as a science fiction film, and that was, that can happen. But if I look at it as horror, it's some supernatural stuff, fine. And the effects when he starts changing in bed vary of their time. Like, a lot of the visuals in this movie for their time were damn impressive.
Yeah, but this is before American Werewolf in London. That I had to look up before this.
The prosthetic in bed, that looked very 1980.
Yeah.
Now, he starts having, the flashback after the trip, on the drug. He's in bed with one of his students because him and Emily had separated. He goes to the bathroom, opens the bathroom door to go back into the bedroom, gets a vision of hell. They establish he's not wearing anything. You see a back shot.
Yeah.
I would think that if he opened the door and saw that vision, there'd be a mess on the floor. Nobody's keeping anything in when you see that.
I thought you were going to say, I thought he would just close the door and just be like, nope, nope.
What kind of dead?
Oh, nothing, dear. Just the gates of hell, in the bathroom.
That's actually what made me think of Beyond the Black Rainbow. Because when he's in the goo, he has a similar vision in that movie.
And what a different time where casually, like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to have dinner with one of my students.
Mm-hmm. And he says that after he says that, they're splitting up, he right away is like, yeah, I'm going to go fuck one of my students.
Pretty much. Yeah. There's there's no sneaking or anything. It's just like, yep, that's what I'm going to do. See you guys. I'll catch you guys later. Just a different time.
Mm-hmm. Now, the scene, like I said, when he was running around as the caveman kind of took away from the movie. The tone was just almost too comedic.
It's really strange.
And then he says,
"What else do you say about it?"
He says that hunting this sheep as a caveman was the most supremely satisfying experience of his life. All I could think is, "Well, you've been to school for a year or two."
Honestly, though, when they got him out of jail, and Emily's first response was to hug him. how is your first response not to just punch him in the face?
Yes. Yeah.
Because seriously, man, what the fuck are you doing?
And when did they get back together?
When she came back from her her trip, she was looking over his stuff.
Okay.
And I guess the more the more she saw of his stuff, the more she realized he was actually onto something and not just losing his mind.
And then he does it again and basically turns into the galaxy brain meme. And that's when I wanted to see Graham Chapman step into frame in the uniform. This is getting entirely too silly.
It's like there's a book I read to my nephew called A Pizza with Everything, and it's like they put pretty much the entire universe on this pizza and it creates a rip in the universe and a black hole, and everything gets sucked into the pizza.
This thing that's almost like the light tunnel from 2001, but more annoying. And at one point you see him, you know, in his change, you know, going back into this primordial soup. He looks like Bib Fortuna.
Right. The story I saw about that was the special effects guy that was doing the effects in the early on quit.
Oh, okay. That explains a lot.
And they were kind of over budget. And they had to do this on the cheap to end this.
Ah, okay. That also explains the prosthetic with his stomach. Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Ran out of money.
They ran out. Yeah, the studio was pissed because they were, like, way over budget.
And they didn't even think to do obvious product placement.
You would think they would have. You'd think they would have.
And if you know what movie I'm referencing there, you've been listening to us for a long time, or you have the same taste in movies as I do.
Oh, there was a very famous Ministry soundbite of this.
Mm-hmm.
When the girl that volunteered to do the sensory deprivation on and had her vision, they asked her, and that line, "I feel that my heart is being touched by Christ,"
right,
is, of course, pretty much the first part of Psalm 69 repeated over and over again.
As soon as you said it there, I remembered it.
Yes. Always got to call out the Ministry soundbites.
Of course, the ending of all of this pseudo-intellectual, kind of semi-religious body horror is that love conquers all.
And that is the story that Chevsky was trying to get at here.
I mean, it wasn't a crowbarred in romantic subplot. The romantic part was really integral to the film. So I can't ding it for that. But that being the ending message?
Chevsky was going for, you know, believe this was just a love story that happened to have all of these diversions in it. I think Ken Russell was really going for just the artist losing himself in everything.
And that's kind of what I took from most of it.
Right.
Or not so just the artist, the obsessive, you know, experimentation and, you know, artist, you know, scientist, whatever. The toll of obsession.
Yes. And it was a theme that Chayefsky put in it, but it wasn't the main theme, but it was what Ken Russell was going for.
Right.
So both things are possible to take away because they had two cooks in the kitchen.
Uh-huh. Incidentally, this was the film debut of both William Hurt and Drew Barrymore, who plays his daughter.
Yes.
Kind of amazing they both had really good careers after this.
Well, this movie, I mean, everyone.
Super influential, of course.
Like, it was considered a bomb, and part of that, of course, is because they put it out, like, on Christmas Day for some reason.
Wow.
Yes, they put it out on Christmas. This was a Christmas movie. You know, the time you go take the kids and the whole family to go see a movie, they put this out then. They, of course, wanted a spring release. where, you know, they would have had less competition and would have had a chance at making something. But, you know, the execs know best, and instead it lived on in cable afterwards.
And no sequels or remakes, fortunately. Well, there hasn't been a sequel. I can kind of see a remake happening.
I could definitely see a remake happening. Although, I mean, it has to be someone that really takes the story and tells it their own way.
Well, I mean, we've been referencing the movie here and there, Panos Cosmatos, Black Rainbow.
Yeah.
Would be the obvious choice.
That would be the guy to do this. This is a great companion piece to The Phoenix. It's a shame we didn't do these the same week, because he speaks a lot about, you know, very matter-of-factly about things, just like The Phoenix did.
On to brains. Like I said, I was on the edge of recommending it, and then that ridiculous caveman thing happened, and then it got even sillier. But on the whole, I did enjoy it. I'm going 3.
It had its flaws, of course, but you got to see this at least once. I mean, it's a visual ride to take. I think much more so than Gothic, and just the whole, religious, question and scientific question, taking the same path to come up with the same answer in the end, is just really a unique thing. You know, his father had that journey where he was very spiritual and very religious, and then on his deathbed was just, it was for nothing. And then he goes through this journey, scientific journey, and then winds up in the primordial soup and realizes
it was for nothing.
Fuck that. So, yeah, I'm giving it a 4.
All right. And what have we learned?
What the inspiration for every music video ever made for about 15 years after this was.
Yeah.
You gotta see it just for that. If you're an MTV kid, you gotta see this fucking movie just for that.
And I learned that you're not allowed to ablate human beings. Who would have thought?
Yeah, who knew?
And that's it for Altered States until 2 weeks from now, because you need next week off.
Yes.
When we'll be reviewing Star Trek Insurrection. Yes, another Star Trek movie. We are committed to getting through the rest of them this year. And I think that includes the DeKelvin verse, right?
Maybe not all of them in this year, but I think we should go for it.
I think it's doable. Maybe. Anyway, until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.